Red 5, I'm going in.
Stay in attack formation.
Welcome to Acolyte Identity. This is Trench Run Report. I'm your host, Justin Gray, and here with me is...
Aaron Russo, standing by.
Sean McKenley, standing by.
David Brooklander, standing by.
And we just got done watching The Acolyte during our 9 o'clock release time. And it's super late, but we're going to try to do the best that we can. So we're just gonna go over the first two episodes that released tonight. So we're just gonna get this out of the way. Spoilers ahead, which we usually tend to do on our shows anyway. And we're just gonna give our first impressions. And yeah, let's dive into it. Well, for starters, I'm still trying to get all the names correct.
Some of them
are memorable. Sol.
I've given them all nicknames.
Moshe,
like Killmonger and Green Lady and
Killmonger.
Yord? Is it Yord?
I don't even know.
Killmonger?
Yeah, he's got the Killmonger haircut.
I almost said Gamora with the...
Yeah, green. Gamora.
That's Rinestra. Like,
yeah, Timu Gamora is what we call her. guy from Squid Game.
So, I remember that. I remember his, like, he's probably my favorite character so far.
The actor does seem pretty good.
Sol?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sol.
Squid Game Sol.
And then... OSHA, which I just think of like Occupational Safety Health Administration, and MAY, which I don't know if that's some kind of acronym or something, but and then I guess that's all the real named characters that matter, right?
I forgot the name of Sol's current Padawan.
The little weird alien girl,
her name.
Jackie.
Huh. Yeah. Hopefully, if they repeat it enough, I'll remember.
Wookiee with Viking haircut or whatever. He's got the top bun thing going.
Mm-hmm.
The Snooky bun, or whatever.
He has enough hair for it.
All right. So, I'll just go into what I liked and what I disliked. And just kind of have that go around the circle. So, I'm going to go with... I don't really have too many dislikes at the moment. I'd say maybe the dialogue is definitely not on par with Andor, which is fine. It is a little bit easier to follow. Outside of some of the lines being a little cheesy here and there, that's kind of all I have for
But that's
right
on
now.
Brand.
But yeah,
right.
it's Star
yeah,
Wars.
Right.
You're going to get that.
There's always a little cringe sometimes.
But for the most part, that's pretty much it. Okay, now we get into likes. I feel like the turns that happened in the story kind of intrigued me. So spoilers ahead. The episode starts off with Mei killing a Jedi, and then we go straight to OSHA, and like at first I was like, okay, what's going on here? And then it kind of hit a little early that there was a twin thing going on. And then during that I was like, okay, so how long are they going to drag that story out? But apparently they kind of cut the strings on that one, and you kind of have the other Jedi characters find that out too a little bit later, but still close enough to not have the story drag. So I thought I liked that. And then that, like, and with that pattern, they kind of do that the same thing in the second episode where they find the Jedi dead, and it's kind of almost pinning up this point where it's like, uh-oh, here we go. The main character is going to get blamed. She's going to have to go on the run again. But they kind of, like, really end that thought very quickly. Mm-hmm.
That's the part that I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be, like, this thing where it was, like, they're constant. It was going to be, like, Fugitive, like, where they're constantly chasing the innocent person who's trying to prove themselves innocent. But instead, they gave us that in the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Where she, by the middle of the second episode, she's completely cleared of any wrongdoing because the second crime happened while she was in custody. Plus, he vouched for the fact that she had a twin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was surprised by that twist as well. That not a twist, but that part of the story was not extended.
So, and I kind of like Osha. I think she and Sol might be my favorite characters so far. Still don't know a whole. I think I still need to be a little bit more exposed with the other two Jedi characters, the Knight and the Padawan, to kind of be like, okay, these characters are cool. But so far, they're just
the
okay.
Knight. The Knight guy has a stick up his butt, which is
I really like him.
But that's probably
I like him. I don't like him, but I like him.
But that's like he was believable.
It's almost like he's trying to like be like Obi-Wan in Phantom Menace, where he's got like the issue with Qui-Gon.
Yeah, that's like,
but
that's
even more like,
right,
but more annoying.
Like he's like a pure product of the Academy, as it were.
Yes, he's like the overzealous guy on his first beat.
Yeah, yes,
he's the like serial guy from Andor.
Yeah, serial.
Yes,
or like Dwight Schrute, you know, like a rule follower guy.
Yeah, he's the one who goes out and he's like, well, this is what I learned in class.
Yeah,
why aren't we doing it that way?
Right. And then, like, the old wise like, street chill, cop dude. Is like, yeah, like,
yeah,
we got this, yeah.
Very, but that is very Qui-Gon Obi-Wan centric.
And then because, like, the other Padawan is under Sol's, like, wing, like, she's much closer to his, like, she's not as...
Direct influence, yeah.
Yeah, she's, like, more, like, Sol in this, like, more following force kind of idea. She's more chill, even though she's younger than the other guy. You'd think she'd be even more, like, she's, like, in school, she's at Hogwarts versus, like, a Hogwarts professor, you know, like the Knight is like a Hogwarts graduate, and she'd be like in the
middle. He's like a grad student who's going to all the undergrads, nope, that's not how you do it.
Right.
Yeah. It's definitely feels like he's like a, just like the new guy on the job that finally got the position that he wanted.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, he has, like, I mean, he knows Osha from when she was a Jedi in training for like 10 years or whatever it was.
Right.
Because she was, like, rescued at 8, which is too old, right? That's just like Anakin. That's probably why they set up, like, Anakin's too old. Because we've had issues in the past with old Padawans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, yeah, for, like, 10 years she was... And then she, like, left. But she's, like, obviously cut off from the Force because they kind of show her, like... She's like, I'll try, and then, nope. She, like, couldn't use the Force to summon the little droid
Game Boy thing. I thought she was going to use it. And then she didn't, and I thought that was really, I like that.
But I mean, that's probably some kind of foreshadowing that she will eventually get tapped back into it, maybe, or maybe not.
Hmm. Yeah. Plus, I really do like the mystery aspect of the show. It kind of did get my gears turning a bit.
I mean, at this point, it's just who is this? Who's like the master of the Acolyte?
Mm-hmm.
Or who she thinks she's following?
Darth Smiley.
We saw, Darth Smiley.
And why? Like, what is the why? Who is the who? What is the why?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how is it that May? Right?
Yeah.
Got.
Yeah. If they saw,
because first like, they said saw they saw her die.
Yeah.
Now she's clearly not dead.
Yeah.
But she's also come full circle to this.
Somehow she returns
to this.
Yeah.
Following this, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
then somehow, Mace Windu says that the Sith haven't been around for 1,000 generations or whatever. So somehow.
Well, Ki-Adi-Mundi says Sith that they were extinct for
a millennium.
Which I don't. Which, I personally don't even really care about all that, but
Darth Bane, baby.
But
but I guess yeah, if the Sith are keeping up the myth or the understanding of that they're extinct, that works for them because then they can be secret.
Well, if you take Ki-Adi-Mundi literally, he was wrong because the Sith aren't extinct; they're just in
hiding. He's misinformed, which they can
or he's arrogant enough to think that they don't exist anymore,
right?
Which I
either one is useful
that.
To the Sith, though.
I always interpreted that whole thing as like
he's ignorant.
Right. Well, I mean, I always interpret that as the Sith went underground, and nobody knows what's going on with the Sith, and they eventually probably just assumed they're dead.
Right.
That's the genius of what Bane did was at that point in the Old Republic canon, it was armies of Sith versus armies of Jedi. So when Sith wiped out the Sith and went to just the rule of two, the Jedi were still expecting a rising of like a Sith Empire. So that's why
and then it didn't happen.
It didn't happen
for so long that they eventually were like, well, I guess they're gone.
They're gone, And then, because
so they believed extinct.
Yeah. So after,
I'm not even sure. My personal take on that is that I personally think that George Lucas isn't the most careful writer in the world, and I don't know that he was thinking too deeply when he used the word extinct versus we haven't seen them versus.
Right. Well, whatever. I mean, the point is
they've
Jedi,
been a non-factor on the galactic stage for a thousand years. For a thousand years, the Sith, if they exist. They're not a player in anything,
right? So, but this could be that it's dark, an order of dark side users that aren't necessarily the Sith or the mantle of the Sith. They're just dark side of the Force users that come and go in this story. And even though the Jedi might know about this incident in the Phantom Menace, they don't count that as the Sith because
that's what we don't know yet how they're going to handle that,
right?
I think
there's no survivors.
To me, that's secondary to me, for me.
Yeah.
And I'm more concerned with is the story going to be well told,
right? Is the who and the why compelling, the why of the villain Thanos, cool, good thesis, let's see that play out, or every villain is only as good as their kind of motivation.
Well, the character development that the first two episodes has almost nothing to do with whoever that hooded figure is.
Right.
So it's not really about that person yet. And so even if eventually they make it very clear that is a Sith character.
Yeah.
And that Sith character was encountered by Jedi and some of those Jedi survived. And yet somehow 1,000 years later or 100 years later, Ki-Adi-Mundi says that the Sith have been extinct for 1,000 years. Now, if that does play out that way and they don't give us some explanation for how that's possible, that's problematic.
Yeah.
Because incongruent storytelling.
Yeah.
But I don't think that makes it, that would take it away from being if it's a good story in and of itself.
Yeah.
I think that, again, that's, for me, I mean, even Dave Filoni plays fast and loose with stuff that could be, considered canon breaking. I mean, he has done that.
Yeah.
But I think,
realistically speaking, every Jedi that encounters said Sith Lord would have to die to keep what Ki-Adi-Mundi said.
Yeah.
Factual.
That's what I'm
saying. Within Disney
die
canon,
or not tell anyone.
Well, right. Either that, or this thing hasn't, or the finding hasn't been addressed to the Jedi Council due to the uncertainty. So
it's like a UFO that we're not going to say was a UFO,
right?
Whatever. Yeah,
pretty much.
Right. We're neither confirming nor denying the existence of the
UFO. That seems to be the most plausible. Because there's even
they hinted about hovering up. We gotta
she said something about it's not politically expedient.
Right. So I can
know this.
Maybe they'll explain it as we gotta keep this under wraps.
I mean
which
it
because
be
it could
very,
ruin everything.
It's a very Jedi thing.
Yeah.
Well, it would also be a very good way of
because then
the way
Ki-Adi-Mundi would
they were by the Phantom Menace where
they're willfully ignorant almost, or they lose track of what even is true if they're covering up lie after lie. They don't even know what's true.
That's a very consistent theme in the High Republic. In the High Republic stories, there's a lot of that where like not everyone sees the Jedi as pure, and it is questionable, like who are they serving? Because it seems like they're more aligned with the Republic, and there is politics involved, and like some people question, like, well, don't you? But you seem to just do what you just seem to kind of. Your mission kind of seems to drift with the interests of the Republic versus a true mission for justice or for helping people.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
That's like May's supplier guy was kind of... He wasn't just like a contractor. He's like... seems to be ideologically aligned.
Right.
Because he's kind of lecturing her about like the Republic and the Jedi or...
But then he's like, also willing to help her break the rules because they weren't supposed to use a weapon.
Yeah. Well, she just has to kill one of them without the weapon, but she's like, I'm going to use my cheat code on this one still, right? Like, she's hitting all the bosses and is, like, saving up her power up for, like, the last boss, I guess. she's like, I tried it on easy mode, or I tried it on medium mode, now I got to downgrade it to easy mode to kill this one guy who's just behind a force field or whatever. But.
What other thoughts did you have, Justin?
As far as the look of the show, again, it looks very Star Wars-ish. Kind of more leans towards the like prequel side of things, which
I liked it. All right. We're still going through the discussion, but I thought it was good. I think you'll like it.
Alright.
Worth watching for sure.
And the music was pretty good. Didn't stand out like Mandalorian or
Bad Batch,
but it didn't stand out in a bad way either.
But there was no iconic theme.
Which, if there was supposed to be, then that's bad because we were supposed to pick up on characters' theme songs or whatever, and we missed
pick up on it.
Then that's probably a fail, right? If it's supposed to go for but
so. The fight choreography was really good. Didn't see too much lightsaber action, which that's fine. You can save that stuff. It was kind of like the Star Wars show that I can see myself watching over and over, but it's still early. Really one of those shows where it's like it has a good strong beginning, let's see where it goes. I'm kind of crossing my fingers, but the first two episodes I did like. They were fun, they kept me engaged. I'll definitely remember it as a first viewing. Not the jaw-dropping opening like Mandalorian, obviously.
That's Mandalorian season one.
That was like in a bottle.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
That's hard to top.
Yep. But overall, is it as awesome as I thought it was going to be? It's kind of in the middle. I mean, I definitely was. I'm not disappointed. Yeah, I mean, I'll save the rating for later, but that's pretty much all I have to say. I liked it. I definitely will watch it tomorrow after work. And I'll definitely listen to other people's opinions on it. That's it. What did you think, Aaron?
I thought it was very strong. I was pleasantly surprised. As the premiere approached, my expectations started to lower, and I was prepared to be mildly disappointed. Like, I think the thing for me is that, like, even before, like, my expectations were. I really didn't have many expectations, and then as we got somewhat closer, I thought, no, I think this has a chop. And then as we got even closer, I was like, and then I read some of the reviews, and I was like, This feels like another. Where I'm just gonna be like I'm not gonna hate it, but I'm not gonna be like haunted by it, like in a good way.
Oh,
like for me, a lot of Kenobi haunts me. Like I can watch parts of that over again, and it's like, it really.
It sticks with you.
Yes, like it, and I can listen to the music, and I can rewatch, and I'm like. But then, like for like most of season three of The Bad Batch, not terrible, but I didn't really feel anything terribly good either.
The music was good.
This I thought was really quite good. I think that one thing that stuck out to me was the pacing of the dialogue. Like I kept thinking about like the first two episodes of Ahsoka, where I was mm-hmm. like. First of all, there's way too much dialogue, and second of all, like you're so like slow, like everybody's talking, and like it's not written well, and there's all these gaps in the dialogue, and it's like tell the story, like you almost feel like you have to like slow down to like even let the show start to pull you, and I feel like this I was in from the beginning, like and it kept me engaged. I thought the writing and the performances were for a Star Wars show. Above average. I think Star Wars live action as a whole is struggles to like find like a rhythm and a stride and be mm-hmm. like a consistent like where yeah. okay that keep going like
right.
And I felt like this did that probably better than anything other than Andor for me. Even like Mandalorian, even as much as the first two or three episodes of season one of Mandalorian were really pretty good, but it was still to me like the dialogue was exceedingly like simple and very mm-hmm. you know kind of I mean overall like I thought the look of the show was great. I like the idea of like they introduced this idea that like the Jedi don't just draw their lightsaber every time there's a fisticuff or whatever, like, and that they only draw it like when they're if they're prepared to use it in a lethal way. Unfortunately for Endara, she didn't get stabbed with a lightsaber. If she got stabbed with a lightsaber, she wouldn't have died. But because she got a dagger in her heart, she's dead.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
So, she bled out. But no,
but no blood because it's Disney.
I was pleasantly surprised. I would say I'm pretty well. I would say that for Star Wars live action, a lot of people were saying it's like Andor, but it's more Star Warsy. I think that's exactly what I felt like. Like there was definitely like Andor vibes for me, where like it's a higher level of quality in terms of overall production value, but also like totally Star Warsy, like. Even that little alien at the beginning that she gives the thing to just looks bizarre. Like,
yeah.
Like, looks right out of, like, Mos Eisley, you know?
Right.
Or, like, the prisoners in that prison thing, like, that's Star Wars right there. Like, they're cringe. Like, every line they gave was corny and cheesy.
Yeah.
Their escape was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. His, like, head, like, became a tentacle.
Yeah. That was just total schlock. Like, that's yeah. Star Wars. It's like the.
It was like in Force Awakens.
It's like the guy in the cantina who's talking to his hand, you know? It's like, that's just ridiculous. Like, but I think that was a really interesting balance of, like, giving it a serious tone, and, like, there was some serious dramatic development and character development and moments and everything. But then it also felt very Star Wars to me. It felt very, like, a lot of aliens and a lot of funny business and, like, silly things going on, and I think that's important because I think that's probably where Andor fell a little short, was that it just completely abandoned that as a Star Wars.
All right, Justin, what's a smile about?
I'm sorry, David. I think I'm gonna ruin David's opinion on Acolyte.
Why?
Please share.
So that escape. So speaking of on that escape scene, You know what I was thinking throughout that scene? And I don't know... Well, I know why, but... Okay, it reminded me of that, like, ending of Spaceballs where I'm just trying to escape.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And she can't find the escape pod to get out of.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Nothing works in the future kind of scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just like, oh... I don't... I mean, that's kind of a weird nod to look at, but I was just thinking, oh. I don't know. That's just a random thought. I'm sorry if that interrupted
me. I didn't. I don't remember Spaceballs well enough to remember what you're talking about.
Yeah, it kind of. I don't know if that was intentional or not. I know Star Wars always tries to not reference Spaceballs in anything.
Yeah, but Spaceballs references Star Wars.
And I know David's
Wars,
hatred
so
towards that, so
yeah.
I'm sorry, David.
That's okay.
It's funny how they all got, like, captured anyway, though.
Right.
Like, even though they escaped, they didn't escape.
I thought overall, like, I really don't have really anything that really stuck out to me as a dislike. Maybe a little bit slow, but, like, I had read some people saying that it started slow. I don't think... I'd say that that was slow-ish, but not slow. Like, I thought Andor started off slower.
Yeah.
And I liked the first two episodes of Andor, but this definitely started faster and had more action mixed in.
I mean, when you walk into the bar and just start a fight, that... It's going to be a little more fast-paced.
Yeah, well, and even, like, the parts, even more, like, even just, like, the storyline and dialogue and stuff, like, even that, like, it all hit. Like, it's all part of the story. It's moving. Like, it's all part of the story that they're telling. Like, I didn't feel any... Obviously, there was no filler here. I think there were some... There were some moments where either the fight editing or the CGI just was a little off.
Yeah.
Where you could kind of tell when you were seeing, like, a trick. And that was just slight moments. But I think that... Maybe that stuck out to me just a little bit more than it should have because I know how much they spent on it. And it's like, man, for 180 mil, it should be flawless, like, in my mind. But, I mean, I think for the most part, it did look fine. I still felt like we were getting a lot of volume stuff. I didn't feel like we were on location terribly much.
I think it's all sets.
Yeah, more sets.
I think it's all sets. I think I think you're touching on what I picked up on is that, like, exterior, like, things that are supposed to be outside when they are sets look like sets.
Yeah, it didn't feel
versus,
like
Andor
somewhere.
Is, like, filmed outside, or even, like,
yeah,
like Ferrix was an outdoor set that is, like,
that feels,
it feels
like a
way more like a location,
right?
Versus like a soundstage that is meant to look
small.
Outside. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
and it didn't feel like they were on location
because, like, Game of Thrones is done on location, like outdoors exteriors, and then, like, castle interiors, but, like, it feels like wide open and cinematic and never feels...
I wonder how much of that is related to the pandemic, because I know that this show has been in production forever.
Yeah, that's probably...
It could very well be that it was in production. I believe it was in production way before the strike even happened.
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
Yeah, I think production was, like, in 2022.
I think, like, 4 years old of, like, from, like, so. Announcement to, like, now airing. It's been 4 years or 3 years or something.
Mm-hmm. I would say my two, I think I really liked it. I would say I'd be 8+ out of 10 for the first two episodes. Maybe not as much. Maybe there could have been more action, but really there was plenty of action. I think the two biggest things that people were worried about, well, maybe the three biggest things. Well, one was just that it wouldn't be any good generally, which I don't think it fell down to, like, the level of, like, wow, that really sucked. Or that was barely good. I thought it was better than average. The other thing was lore, concerns about Star Wars lore and breaking lore or whatever, which so far I don't think they did. Although they did show the red lightsaber. But then I've heard a lot of people talk about the fact that, you know, like, a red lightsaber is not an automatic
Sith
situation, although
only Ben. With
I feel
Sith.
Like that's like,
yeah.
Well, technically no, but
it's the
mostly
no,
yes.
It's the no true Scotsman fallacy. Like, we've only ever seen only the red lightsaber people we've seen are Sith, But that doesn't necessarily mean a red lightsaber means you're a Sith.
Well, because then Kylo Ren always wasn't associated technically with it. A Sith.
Right.
I feel like the lightsaber crystal bleeding thing is more of a Sith rite of passage.
Right.
That's done more with the Sith than any other force-wielding group.
So. But at this point in the story, like, they haven't... I don't feel like... Like, I feel like if your concern was lore-breaking, they haven't done it yet. So, that's a good thing. Like, they haven't done anything where you're like,
right.
Oh, now I have to, like...
Well, and like
tell
it or
myself
not,
that makes sense.
Like it or not, like they're the dungeon master now in this play of Dungeons and Dragons. Like they are the lore. Look at me, I'm the lore now, right? So like there is, when you own it, you own it. Or when, like George said, when you let it go, right? So it's like,
well, yeah,
you,
I mean,
he handed over the lore, and now you get to be the lore keeper.
Well, especially
the
when
maker.
You're in a time period that's never been done before,
right?
Right? Like it's just close enough to the prequels to have some lore continuity. But it's a blank slate.
Yeah, they had references to that
and
Nemodians and everything.
I think so far for having a blank slate, like I think they did a pretty good job. The other thing that I think people were concerned about was some of the like statements made by the showrunner just about different political things or her feelings on Star Wars or whatever. I think there was only one moment. There was a moment where I think, other than the only moment where I thought that crept in was there was a line, I think, at the beginning where somebody was, I believe, talking to May and said, your mother's.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys picked up on that, but.
Well,
but like,
yeah, that's what I think, that's like a witch group. Like they were raised by witches or whatever, isn't that like who that one character is?
I don't know if that's referring, I mean, I assume
like
that she was talking about
like a death
her
of
parents.
No, I think it's like a coven of witches that like raises the twins.
So you don't think she's talking about her parents?
Those are like, I think it's like a matriarchal like coven of witches that like raise collectively all these kids.
Okay.
I mean, unless
they have a way to do that without any
yeah
non-witches around.
I don't know. No, actually for me, the one that I picked up on, which I don't know if it was intentional or just me, but like when he's like looking at the hologram of her, and then the Padawan's like basically like nostalgia and whatever are like dangerous, like why do you still hold on to that nostalgia, that whatever, and it's like, is that like a dig at us, like what is that?
I didn't even think about
she's like throwing
that
shade at like hardcore fans who are like, stop like gazing upon your old icons of the olden ways. Like move
yeah, but then
on, move forward.
He validated it. He was like,
right.
He was like, no, no.
Well, you got to learn
like
from your past.
They're lessons.
Yeah.
Huh. Right. And they have meaning.
Right. So is that some kind of like meta thing, or is that just like, am I making
it
meta?
I didn't pick that up.
I think I made it too meta.
That it might be.
Yeah.
Like this will begin to make everything right.
Right.
Like
yeah. Like what?
Like,
yeah.
Oh.
Was everything wrong before? I don't know.
I think you're just
I would say that.
I thought the Emperor was dead.
I would say that ultimately most of my concerns did not materialize so far.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely pleasantly surprised. I found myself more engaged in that than even like most of the Ahsoka stuff or even a lot of the Mandalorian. Like I feel like it was tighter storytelling, more character-driven, a little bit more substance than things like The Mandalorian or even Ahsoka. I think Ahsoka did have maybe enough substance, but just there was just something about how Ahsoka was done overall, especially early on, that just I was just like, this is just isn't like getting me. Really, probably not until the episode with Anakin in it did it really start to pull us in a certain direction. But yeah, I don't know. I can't really think of any glaring dislikes. Yeah, some of the writing was very Star Wars-y, but like you said, Sean, that's kind of on brand. Like, I didn't feel like it took me out. There was never really any time when I was taken out of what I was watching. I think that's something that I've struggled with, is like even Star Wars that I really like, it's like perfect example of that was like I loved almost the entire episode of Obi-Wan on Fortress Inquisitorius.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hides Leia under his jacket and I'm like, me, like that is just ridiculous. Like, it just takes me out of it, right? You're just like,
yeah. It's the most logical move though, if you think about it. It's like, oh, Because you're in a hurry, you're trying not to get discovered, and you want to try to get to the ship as quick as possible, and you have a lab coat on.
For me, it was when the chick, like, knocked out those two stormtroopers by, like, smacking them and, like, flipping the other one, and then they're out cold.
See, I don't feel like there was any moments in this, for me, where I was like, oh, well, that didn't work.
Well,
but it didn't, but this show also didn't blow me away. It definitely didn't blow me away. But I think it did above what I expected it to do, and did above what I feel like I've gotten from a lot of live action Star Wars. And I think you can tell, regardless of how you feel about Filoni versus Leslie Headland, I think you can see that she has more experience with, like, live action. She has more experience with showrunning.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, she at least, you know,
yeah,
has the chops for it that Filoni doesn't necessarily
have. The
craft
of live action TV.
Yeah.
She's more adept at it.
I think there were, like I said, I think sometimes it felt small. It felt not on location. It felt almost, like, stagey.
Yep.
I didn't notice it, but, like, with, like, a lot of the other shows, like, you almost get, like, with, what's the deal called that they film it in?
Volume.
Where, like, if it focuses on something, like, around, like, the character or whatever, it gets kind of, like, that wave effect. You guys noticed that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice it with Acolyte.
Yeah, I didn't see that as much here.
I don't know if they used the volume as much, if at all.
Yeah.
For this, like, sets.
I thought that, but I do think that even if they didn't, it still also didn't feel like Andor, where you're like, oh my gosh, we're clearly
on location. Yeah, you just can't beat it on location. Yeah. You just can't.
And I guess the other thing would just be, you know, I don't know, it wasn't like, I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, I got more, there was more action than, I'll tell you one thing that bothered, okay, that one dude who was levitating, there was just something about how his face and his, like, his head that just did not work for me. It was like, just, something didn't look right, and he almost looked like Obi-Wan with a mullet.
Oh,
yeah. He almost had that Obi-Wan with a mullet episode 2
look.
That's
what bothered you about that guy?
I don't understand why.
Or what, did you notice his feet?
That's what I was going to say.
Those are his shoes. That's how they.
Was that his
those
shoes?
Are Jedi shoes or whatever.
Like little slippers on or something?
Yeah, it's like your big toe goes in. It's like Crocs or like, what are they?
Like Crocs.
They're like mittens for your feet.
Huh.
Yeah,
and
like samurai.
If I'm wrong, but
like
were
samurai.
They insinuating that he'd been hovering there for a decade?
Yeah. Which is so, like, that to me was my biggest, like, huh? Is like a Jedi who commits suicide after being suspended for 10 years. Like, he, I guess, is guilt-ridden over what happened. And, like, that's so out of place and so out of left field. I've never seen anything like that of, like, a Jedi who's so, like, ashamed or dishonored. Like, why would he wait 16 years to do it? Why didn't he just, like, do it earlier? Or, like, I don't know, like...
Well, I think that was... There's two things about that. Number one, I think that... So he took the Barash vow, which is usually a vow that Jedi take who feel like or know that they've done something wrong and they need to reconnect with the Force.
Oh.
And so they take a vow and they kind of withdraw from, like, active duty, I guess.
Is that something that's, like, in the High Republic only?
That's, like... No, I think that's...
It sounds familiar.
The
Is that one vow that Jedi that Jake Lakes took that Vader killed as his, quote, first Jedi kill in the comics?
Oh, the old guy?
Yeah, like the big beard.
I think so.
Maybe that's why.
I guess I'm a filthy casual when it comes to that. Like, I was like, I don't understand, like, you're throwing around, like, terms I don't know, and, like, why is this guy just floating here? Why has it been 10 years? And then why is... He immediately, like, kill himself when he sees the girl, I guess, again. And, like, what is his state of consciousness?
Well, we don't
he's
know.
In, like,
yeah.
that
I
state.
Feel like he
like,
said he was waiting for May. So that was kind of, I guess that was kind of the green flag for him to atone, in a way. So.
Well, I think one thing, another thing about that a lot of people do like about the High Republic, and that I've noticed about the High Republic, is the Jedi in the High Republic stories are much more human. Like, what I mean by, like, they're much more prone to certain kinds of thoughts or behaviors or psychological makeup that we can relate to more than, like, the prequel Jedi who just seem to be, like, robotic or blank.
Yeah.
Or... very dogmatic.
Because I was thinking, like, in the original trilogy, we literally only saw we saw Obi-Wan for a while, and then we saw Yoda training Luke, and then dying in Return of the Jedi. And, like, that's literally the only Jedi we saw on screen in the original trilogy. And then, like, you could say kind of Luke.
One foot in the grave.
Right. So it's like we've never, they've only, it's one of those, like, never meet your heroes. Like, the Jedi have always been, like, shrouded in, like, mystery and cool, like, mystery factor. Like, Boba Fett before anything else. Like, just from Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
Like, wow, this guy, like, what's, no disintegrations, what does that mean? Right. And it's like, it's almost better left, like, unexplained of, like, oh, they're, like, the mythical knights of old or whatever. And it's like, and to some degree, it's like, that would have been better to leave that alone than to, like, let's fully explore all that. Because then it's like, you almost, like, demystify them, or, like, you de-enchant, you disenchant the whole thing.
Well, I think in the larger story, I think that's a fascinating idea, right? Like I think by the time you get to even in the Bad Batch, where people are like,
yeah.
Some, like, by the time you get to Force Awakens, people don't even know if the Jedi were ever even real at all.
Yeah.
And then to think that they used to be,
yeah,
like, known across the galaxy and have this power
posts, you know, and stuff, yeah.
And then for temples. Them to be buried by history,
yeah,
is very interesting. But I do think that this does line up with, like, what Leslie Headland said about, like, that she was drawing from High Republic and prequel, and I do really feel like this is an effective prequel portrayal of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from what, we haven't seen too much yet, but, like, I do feel like that was, it's like, oh yeah, like, between what I've read of the High Republic and this, it feels very consistent. Like, it feels like a consistent through line of, like,
mm-hmm,
okay, this is what they're like here, and then this is what's happening as they go into the prequel era, which,
yeah,
is a separate era. But I thought what was cool too, I just like the visual, like, I like that they, like, it felt like prequel Coruscant Jedi, but also not. Like, it was its own look,
mm-hmm,
but it didn't completely depart from the previous, and it didn't completely embrace the previous. And I thought that was done really well. And, like, the mixture of how the Jedi were dressed, the way the temple looked, the way the interior of the temple looked was familiar but not just reproduced.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of the challenge of this was, can we tell a new Star Wars story in a completely different time period and have it look new but still look like Star Wars? I think they did that very, very well. Like,
mm-hmm,
I think we didn't see any familiar ship designs. Everything looked pretty new. Like, you know, it wasn't like Force Awakens where it's like, oh, we don't call it a TIE fighter, but we all know what that is.
Yeah.
Like, this was very original in a lot of its visuals. I noticed the Jedi were always wearing, like, kind of like a hand plate. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah,
it had, like, armor
sense,
like, over,
yeah,
their hand.
Huh.
Samurai-esque.
Yeah, very, yes.
Kind of.
And I think that was something also that, ooh, Leslie Headland mentioned, that, like, she was heavily influenced by samurai or,
mm-hmm,
like, ninja type of stories, and you saw that a lot here, and especially, like, in the combat. Like, I thought that was really, I really enjoyed that it reminded me some of the Vader, when Vader was confronting Reva and he was,
oh,
just using his hands and dodging the whole time, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah,
like, it reminded me of that. Like, Vader was like that. Like, he could just okay, I don't even take on my lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
He just uses the force and his reflexes to just dominate someone. And I thought that was very, very, very well done. Like, I think that could have felt, that could have,
it drug, in my opinion, it drug, they dragged that out way too long.
Dragged out the hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, in real life, like,
yep,
a lightsaber would have just come out immediately and the threat would have been neutralized immediately.
Yep, or like, within the first couple seconds, the Jedi would have the lightsaber out. Like, they might,
right,
try to,
right,
diffuse things hand-to-hand, but if it continued, then they'd be like, all right, enough's enough.
I think in this case, it was because, at least for the story's sake, if not actually in the story, like, they want to capture her, I think. I don't think they want her dead.
What makes Vader and Reva so good is that Vader did the Force, but then he also switched to the lightsaber, and it wasn't like this. He drug out that conflict. He was, all right, nope, back. Okay, lightsabers, now it's over.
Right.
Where this, it kind of seemed like, I mean, the action scenes were good, but it just kind of kept going. So it's like, all right, is anyone going to land a punch, or is it just going to be Kung Fu Bruce Lee? Right.
Like the whole time. Contact.
Yeah. I mean, like, oh, I mean, I was referring like to the very first fight with Trinity. Like, she wasted all this time with hand to hand combat. Like, they could have just done that. They have that, like, neutralized. Like, remember in Westworld when they're like, they like say that special word and they just like comply.
Right.
Like, they do. They can just do that. And the guy was just like, and then he was like, I'll answer all your questions. Like, couldn't she just have like done that to May, and then like put her in handcuffs, or like, I don't know. It just seems like,
or done what Kylo did, just force freeze him.
Or, yeah, like, it just seems like unnecessary to do a big like kung fu fight for no reason when you could have just like chopped her hands off with the lightsaber and neutralized the threat immediately and save everyone in the bar because she threatened that one guy.
Right? that is to in terms of continuity a frequent theme in High Republic material though too, is like. Like, there's sometimes debates between Jedi in there who, like, because there's like some Jedi who are like literally want to literally talk through everything, like, mm-hmm. without even like engaging in any violence, whether it's self-defense like or not.
Or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you have some who are more like, well, you know, and then you have.
Shoot first, ask questions later.
Like, Yord is like the only one who takes his lightsaber out in that one sequence. Like,
yeah.
He's. Right. He's that loose cannon, right? That rookie with the gun, and it's like, yeah, dude, we don't pull that. Yeah, we don't pull that every time, dude.
Right.
Like, that could go off.
Like the fight scene, like, the fight scenes were good for like an action scene, but both, there's, I think, I want to say it's like halfway between both fights where it's the hand-to-hand combat where May tries to steal the lightsaber.
Yeah.
At that point,
I'm like, okay.
The Jedi would be like, all right, enough stuff. Right. Then the lightsaber comes out. Not the continued Bruce Lee fast hands kung fu fighting.
I think in this case that whether it's plot armor or whatever you want it to be, like, both of the fights were with May, and May is so essential to the story you can't do her in right
away. Well, and in the fight with Sol, he was trying to get her to answer like, who's your master?
Yes.
Who's your daddy? And like, he disarmed her secretly by like taking all her knives,
which I loved that he was just like,
so like, he owns her in a sense, but like, she was able to get away, but he wasn't trying to kill or even disarm her, so he was just trying to get information. But I guess, again, like, if you can neutralize the threat, then you can interrogate later. You don't have to interrogate during the fight, which is like a total trope. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen in real life.
I think that might just be under the file of plot.
This is how we do TV, because we have during a fight conversation,
plus she has to survive because you haven't told us everything about her yet, so it's like, which one are they gonna do? They chose that.
So I would say that I wasn't blown away, but I wasn't like, it was very what's the word, serviceable to me.
That's fair.
That's a good
one. Think like with the writing, I think it is, it's better. So, like, they say, like, there's and then and so then in writing. So it's like, and then, versus, like, so then. Like, because of A, now B happens, and then C has to happen, and so on. Versus, like, when kids write a story, they're like, this, and then that. And it's, like, not necessarily totally connected, like, logically or, like, organically. And just, like, it's, like, Andor is, like, the masterclass of, like, things just, like, unfold naturalistically, but also like according to like logic and like consequence and the cause and effect, and almost it's like unforced. But when you try to force the cause and effect, that's how you get. And then it's like they're here because they have to be here.
This show did that.
Yeah, they did it a little more, but not as bad as like Mando season 3, which is like the most egregious version of that for sure. And then like Ahsoka's kind of like that too.
That's so accurate,
right? Like it's like and then. And it's then like,
you're like, by the time you get to the end, you're like, I'm not even sure like, what happened.
Nothing was caused by anything else. It was just like, it happened because the plot required it to happen.
Right.
Because that's what Dave Filoni said is going to happen next. And it's a non sequitur, right? It doesn't flow from its premise.
Right.
So like, this is better at that, but it still has some of that going on to me.
I would agree with that.
Andor was just like, just unfolding organically. You're just kind of like, right, and like top tier stuff like Game of Thrones just like unfurls before you, and it's like right. It's just like coming down like a river out of a mountain.
Yeah,
it's
this just, felt more. This felt right. A little bit more like.
Right.
Like almost like you could see the right. Gears behind it.
Yes. Yeah. Mechanistic. Yeah, yes. Versus naturalistic. Yes. So, that's a criticism. But yeah, I think it looks pretty well like lived in. It's not. I was a little worried with some of the shots that it was gonna be like too cosplay-y and too neat and tidy, which for the like the Jedi's outfits and stuff, it would make sense that they have like a like uniforms. They're all wearing like the same robes, and they are not like kind of dirty and worn. They're kind of nice, right? But like everything's not super. It's not like as dusty as like Tatooine, but it's like
yeah.
You know, I would love to see. So we know Coruscant is like a big city, but like seems like everywhere that's not Coruscant that is just like a third world country, like Motif, you know,
or it's like or barren entirely.
Yeah, it's like barren, or it's like if you're in town, it's like this rough, like it's either Mogadishu or like the desert or like New York City, and there's no in between. There's no like where's like suburbia in Star Wars, or like where's like just Alderaan. Like a nice like Mayberry town, or like
Alderaan was kind of,
I guess,
not. It wasn't third yeah. World and it wasn't Coruscant.
But like whenever they're like on the mean streets, right? It's always like the pickpockets. There's
about
like
that,
there's
but
street
as you're
urchin.
That,
you
like,
can always hire a street urchin to do your dirty work for you. And like there's like, you know, you made away with my thing. And it's like Aladdin. Like the whole thing is like Aladdin's town all the time. You know what I mean?
Oh my god.
Like,
well, like yeah, even in like Rogue One.
Yeah, everything's like. Yeah. But I mean, that's part of like I don't know the motif is just like yeah, the grimy
the,
galaxy or whatever, but
Bingo slot.
Yeah, so like I don't know. I wish they would use like I know they need like I'm torn because it's like yeah you want to make up new planets that we've never heard of before, but like they're not like super distinguished or super like I'm never gonna forget that planet. It's like replaceable, like interchangeable planets. And I'm like, could you, like, let's just stick to the 12 main planets we know about and just have everything happen there, right? Like,
yeah,
let's see Nar Shaddaa. Let's
thing,
see, like, planets
only,
we know.
The only, like, location
you know?
That stuck out to me was the city in the second episode. Like, it was, like, Jeddah, but it was on a green planet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it had that, those lights. And, like, and I thought that was very cool visually. But all the other planets... utterly forgettable. Like,
yeah.
One of them was just snow and rocks.
Right.
And then even like, even we weren't really even really on. We're only
yeah.
Really on two planets, three. Two?
I think
two or three.
So and then my
it was in the ships.
My other like criticism with
well,
like
four,
the, writing structure is so I'll also say too that it is like yeah it avoids a lot of the like jolted dialogue with like the long pauses and like the weird editing, like it's more tight, but. Like structure wise I would have loved to have seen instead of like I would have loved to see Osha we only see like we should only see Osha's perspective and she should be like why is this happening to me, I'm being framed, like and like she should be both on the run from the Jedi and trying to like and like being pursued
uncover
by her like her sister trying to kill her or like her sister trying to set her up and she's either she's also she will uncover that her sister's alive, she didn't know it, but also like she's being actively framed by the Jedi and it's more of the cat and mouse and she's having to like exonerate herself while also trying to uncover the truth, which the Jedi are also trying to uncover, but they like immediately team up. It'd be nice to have like three parties going, right? Like she's on her own, she doesn't know who she can trust, and like you could have like
instead of her being with the Jedi already,
yeah, or like she would have reason to not trust the Jedi and maybe trust Mei, but then like she can't fully trust Mei or fully trust the Jedi, and she has to kind of be on her own. And like I don't know, just it happens like it's like you know it's a and then stuff. It's just like oh, and then like I guess time to be together. And I don't know, like it could have been
a little more
tension
initially.
Like you build up more tension, like the tension release cycle within like within episodes, within scenes, and within like between scenes. Like that's like the craft of storytelling is like you play with the dials of tension and release. And like subversion, expectation, and like, you know, all those like dials that you see in really good shows. It's like when it's amateurish, this isn't quite as bad as it is in other things. But it's like some of that, like, oh, that's oh, oh, that's an interesting choice, like the strategy choices of like where are we taking the story and what beats are we going to hit when and when are we going to have which characters converge when. Those, some of those decisions are kind of like, interesting. Like, I don't know why.
I found that
not
to
in
be,
a good way. It's like, oh, that's when you decided to bring them together?
I was pleasantly surprised by some of those things. Like, some of the things that I was expecting and how quickly they resolved them did two things for me. Number one, it's like, oh, okay, well, that wasn't what I thought was going to happen, so now I'm really not sure what's going to happen. Number two, a lot of the things in the trailers, with a few exceptions, that were seemed significant, we saw already.
Yeah.
Which they are pretty good at doing that.
Yeah.
Like, so we don't really know what we're getting. There's definitely things that we haven't seen yet that are in the trailers, but...
But like, I think all that stuff, just like with every other show, I think all that's in the first half of the season. It was true with Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. Like, everything in Ahsoka's trailers was from the first half.
Right.
So
none,
like,
of it was when they were on that...
Right. So there's a whole half to the show that we have never seen anything about yet.
Well, we've seen some things, like some...
But I think that's coming for 3 and 4. But... Episodes 3 and 4. I think, like, the showdown, like, when you see... You know, Darth Smiley. I think Darth Smiley face is like the mid season turn episode, like
really?
Episode 4. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I
think episode 4 is like they're gonna encounter Mick Smiley, and in that forest, and you'll see the whip and like that kind of foresty dark, like the at night in forest scenes, and they all light up at once.
You think that's gonna
I think
happen
that's
by
happening
the
in
4. Episode?
Yeah, I think that's in the 4th episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think yes. That character is like the next one in the next episode.
Hmm.
Her character with like the kid that's eyes turn black. Like, I think that's the next one.
Hmm.
I don't think we've seen anything from the back half of the season yet, in previews.
I mean, I hope not. If we haven't, that'll be very interesting.
Because that's par for the course. That's how they operate. Like every other trailer, when you break it down after the words, it's like 95% first half of the season.
First half.
Yep. David?
Oh, man, excuse me.
Your thoughts?
Do you want likes or dislikes?
Yes. Yeah, both.
Both? Okay, here we go. It's going to be a long episode. No.
We have 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. Likes? Visually, it looked really good. It had that Star Wars feel. Story kind of went on a little bit of a plot twist, which was kind of cool. It was cool seeing Nemoidians in live action again at the beginning.
Without their whatever accent people think that is.
without their...
Somewhat there, but...
Somewhat,
not,
but
not
clearly changed.
That.
They clearly
without their
like,
full,
yeah.
Dial that down, guys.
Without their full Japanese
and we
dialogue.
Have a girl Nemoidian now, which doesn't look any different than a boy Nemoidian, but...
visually it looked good. I'm not going to say it was like... super good, kind of on the same boat with you, Sean.
Yeah.
Dislikes. There's not to nitpick too much. I thought a lot of the dialogue, like with the Jedi and just the way the Jedi like carried themselves, other than
Soul.
Other than him, they all kind of seemed like. Kind of cringe for me. Especially since it's supposed to be that 100-year gap between this and Phantom Menace.
Mm.
It's kind of hard. Like a couple of the Jedi, they kind of seemed cocky and arrogant. Like when they...
In the show?
Yeah. Like when they first walk on, they have like the flamboyant robes. And he goes right away into the almost the forced mind tricks, trying to pull the information out of the Nemoidian. So it's like, okay, that doesn't quite fit for, you know, how a Jedi would react, because they negotiate, try to figure out best settlements, because they're also not enforcers yet. That's Clone Wars era. So there's still democracy, negotiate. If it comes to violence, then they defend, preserve life. Where this, it kind of seemed like almost like it was forced. So, I wouldn't say like dark side, but it was still like, that's kind of arrogant, like right off the bat. Just be like, hi, I'm this Jedi. Cooperate with us. Or I'm just going to use the Force and get what I want. Yeah, just the whole High Republic thing, just to me, it's kind of cringe. A lot of it is, it just doesn't seem Jedi-esque, if that makes sense.
Like in the show, you mean?
Yeah.
Or in the High Republic in general?
Just High Republic in general. And I get they're trying to tell like new stories within like a new era that hasn't been talked about. But coming from the legends, it has been talked about. It's been established. The Jedi are, they were an army of Jedi, then they disarmed. Now they're guardians of peace and justice. Now, then they fall into that political trap that Plagueis and Palpatine set up for their demise. This just has like a totally, I don't know. I don't really like the High Republic. And maybe I would if I got into like a lot of the books and stuff, but it just doesn't have that Jedi vibe that George Lucas established within like the Phantom Menace, how their Jedi are portrayed by like Obi-Wan and Yoda in the OT. And then you have the novels and the comics, the originals, that kind of built up off that. I do like Saul. Is it Saul?
Saul, I think.
I think like he's like the most relatable of the Jedi. Where he's not kind of like Qui-Gon, like, yeah. I guess. Mm-hmm. Where he,
even his hair
is yeah. Where he's like, here's like the dog among the rules, mm-hmm. but also realizing life isn't necessarily like you can't just live like that.
Right.
So I think his character seems more realistic as far as like a Jedi would be. I guess we'll see kind of how it goes, since it is just the first two episodes, so things could kind of like play themselves out. I didn't really like that one Jedi that's friends with I'm forgetting her name.
The girl?
Yeah.
The red, the green one?
No. The Jedi who uses lightsaber as a flashlight.
Oh, Killmonger.
Yeah.
Oh, Yor.
Yeah, I didn't really like him.
I don't think we're supposed to like him.
Right. He's supposed to be...
But I think he does a good job of making us
right.
like
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it kind of seemed... I kind of almost laughed when during that second episode. So, like, in that first part, when Mei goes to fight that Jedi, she makes that... Takes a shot at the Jedi of, oh, a Jedi's not supposed to take the lightsaber out until, no, they're forced to kill someone. And then he... That Jedi who uses lightsaber as a flashlight, he kind of... like almost like a gunslinger, like reaches for it, pulls it out once or twice, and then that Jedi like with the blue lightsaber in the temple, get away from the body.
The other thing I would
he's the guy that if you had a substitute teacher in school and it's 1 minute left in the class, he'd go, oh, teacher, we forgot to collect our homework from yesterday. You idiot. Like, we almost got away with it.
And then there was...
I do also think Yord was in there too. To correct the shirtless Kylo Ren scene.
Yeah.
Now, this was that, is the kind of person you put on.
I mean,
on
was that for girls or
not
like,
Kylo Ren?
What was that? Like, was that like supposed to be like, oh, sorry. Like, what was that supposed to be? Like,
I have no idea. Like, other than that, it seemed to maybe imply that the other Padawan was like, you better put some clothes on. Not.
Yeah, right.
No, I don't. Why was he doing that in like the middle? Like, he's like ironing his robe in like the middle of the giant room. Like, I don't understand.
Or I think that was just
fan service.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's a double standard, though, right?
Air, maybe.
Because if you had, yeah, I mean, I guess there was enough of that with like between like the Leia bikini and like Padme, but like in the Disney era, there's not been that. I'm like, there's not been like eye candy for the boys, as it were. There's only been for the girls, like
oh, except for all the asses in Ahsoka.
Shirtless Kylo Ren. I don't know if that's like I don't know if they're like dialing that up to 11 or if that's just like happenstance.
I think that's just us
being. I know, that's what I'm saying. I think they're just,
I'm sorry.
They're just women who exist with asses, and we're all like, oh,
hey,
they're showing it off.
A,
it's like,
why
oh,
do we
they're
need
just...
a shot of this chase scene from behind just her ass? Because
Filoni is like, oh yeah.
That's a hilarious.
That was
a
great video. That was a great
I did get laughed out of the. I'll just call him the fat Jedi at the temple.
Oh,
he's giving me big Samwell Tarly vibes.
It's like, I don't know, that Jedi kind of looked like the, oh, I see him screwing up a mile away. Like, I can see him screwing up.
Yeah, he's Samwell Tarly from Game of Thrones.
I like that they had like, I think that, I thought it was cool that the Jedi who worked at that temple, that they said was kind of like on the outskirts, you know? Like how they were like the, I don't know. They're like the rural. They're like the the trailer park Jedi. And then the guys with the fancy robes show up, and they're like, "Oh, we don't usually." He says something like, "Wow,
Coruscant usually doesn't send anyone."
Yeah, like there's like class even within the Jedi, right? And like that was in the books too. Like in High Republic, there's like this debate going on about like outposts that are either need to be shut down or that Jedi don't go to very often or. That only like oh you got stationed there.
Yeah.
Ah,
I mean that'd be cool because like remember in Game of Thrones when like all of the maesters like they were of different categories or different like levels of so like Qyburn was like way out there, he was like ostracized, he like lost his chain because he like experimented on people medically and they like defrocked him for it, you know. And then there's like the good guy from Winterfell who's like the really good advisor guy, right? And he's like. So, like, that'd be cool to see, like, yeah, Jedis have different, like, characters, basically different, like, levels of corruption, as it were, or, like, they've, like, sunk, like, they've gone native, right, or whatever. Like, that'd be cool to see, like, a Jedi who's, like, has more affiliation and more affinity for, like, the home planet that he's, like, a guardian for.
That's something that comes up in that book, The Living Force, like,
right.
How, like,
they don't
the Jedi and Coruscant were getting very insulated.
Right,
but then they would. But then when they went out, they met these Jedi. Like, oh, I've been stationed here for 10 years, man.
Right. It's like the last samurai, right? Like the army comes back, and Tom Cruise is like, "Nah, I'm joining the samurai," and then he fights them. Right? It's like that kind of idea. Like, that'd be cool if like the missionary like accidentally gets converted to their religion on accident. You know what I mean? Anyway.
Yeah, I thought the Jedi just looked a little too flashy, especially on Coruscant. The shots of the temple were really sweet, but it just kind of seemed like, you guys have seen that Old Republic cinema little deal with Malgus when he attacks the temple.
Yeah,
he talks about how like the Jedi have rested in their cradle of power, and, like their time for destruction is now kind of thing. That's kind of what that seemed like the Jedi were at like their height of their power, and they were just like. Golden robes, flashy white capes. It didn't really seem to fit for, I guess, what the Jedi, especially in like the prequels, since we're close to that era, kind of how they would present themselves. Then I did notice the Jedi, like in the prequels, all the Jedi have their lightsabers on like their left side. This one, it was back and forth a lot. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but like the lightsaber hilts. They look like
they're giant.
They look like monster energy drink cans.
Yeah,
it was like whopping big. Like
that's for those D batteries in those for the D batteries that they need for their like tubes because they just had the skinny little rotoscopes back in the day. The little skinny ones for like later on they'd add the color in post, but now they've got it was really obvious with Trinity like when she went like this, you could like see like the plastic basically like you could see the tube. That like was emanating the light. It was like I don't know. I felt like that was really obvious.
I noticed it with the Jedi in the temple when he held his lightsaber.
Yeah,
I
don't like the Disney era sabers at all. I like the prequel era sabers the best, but
yeah,
it's more labor intensive to do it in post to like color in the colors in post production than to have it on set lit. Like it's naturally lit from the glow stick saber.
Mm.
Like that's just a stylistic choice. I don't agree with. But anyway,
we're out of time. I thought the fight just dragged out too long. But yeah, I'd say it was fun to watch. But from like a Star Wars like lore standpoint and everything, it was just I didn't really think it was that good. But I'm definitely interested in seeing kind of where they progress and where the story goes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of in the same boat with you, Sean.
Alrighty. So with that being said, we'll just go around like very quickly on ratings. Though I think Aaron kind of gave a somewhat of a rating already.
Right? I'm gonna say 8.5 out of 10 for me.
Oh, okay.
8.5 out of 10, but I think probably some of that is just that it was just it exceeded my expectations. I'd say color me pleasantly surprised, and maybe putting me in a generous mood.
A surprise to be sure.
Okay.
But a welcome one.
But we have to see what the rest of the story is.
Alrighty. Well, I'm going to go with a 8.3 out of 10. Solid, fun, again, pleasantly surprised. Can't wait to see where it goes. Yeah. Sean?
I will say 7.0.
Flat. 0.0, huh? 0.0. I'll probably go, I'd give it maybe 6.5.
Okay.
It was fun to watch. Visually, it was really good. But yeah, there's just too much in the conflict for me with Old Republic versus High Republic. So.
Alrighty. Well, it looks like we'll be doing these weekly. So we'll be here for the next one. And until then, may the Force be with you.
Always.
Great shot, kid. That was one in a million.